Just before we start today, are you a teacher? Most listeners aren't, because we aim this show at students. But if you are an educator of some form, I just wanted to let you know that I'm co-authoring a special series this month on effective studying with this week's podcast guest, Peps McRae, for his famous ultra-concise, ultra-high-value Evidence Snacks email newsletter. In the three-part series we've put together, I'm sharing some of my all-time favourite tips and tricks that I've learned over the years to help embed smarter study strategies in your school, helping students study smarter, not harder, going beyond the research recommendations to figure out exactly what we need to be telling students to help them put good ideas into practice. In the email series, I'm even giving away some of my teaching resources so you can pick up some ready-to-teach lessons so you can deliver these ideas directly into your school. So you get slides, a little video, and even a workbook for your learners. Follow the link in the episode description to catch up on any emails in the series that you might have missed so far, and then sign up to Peps's Evidence Snacks email list to get the rest of the series delivered directly to your inbox. For everyone else listening, all my non-teacher friends studying hard for their exams at school, university and more, I just wanted to say, especially if your exams are coming up soon over the next few weeks, hang in there, my friends, keep going, you've got this. And now, here's today's episode.
Welcome to the Exam Study Expert Podcast, helping you ace your exams at school and university through the psychology of high performance and the science of studying smarter, not harder. It's my pleasure to introduce your host, the Cambridge-trained memory psychologist and exam success coach, William Wadsworth!
Hello and welcome to the Exam Study Experts podcast. By the time this episode airs, all being well, I'll hopefully be holding a new little baby. So over the next couple of weeks, I wanted to dip into the archives to bring you a couple of past gems you may have overlooked. Today, we're revisiting a conversation I had, and I can't believe I'm saying this, full 3 years ago with Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel, who is one of the founders of the incredibly influential Learning Scientists podcast, blog, and general movement to get evidence-based practice out into the world. I honestly can't believe it's been 3 years since I talked to her. It only seems like a few months ago. Anyway, the Learning Scientists had a massive impact on me in my life in the run-up to me originally launching this whole exam study expert thing. So it was a real kind of fanboy moment to get to interview one of them. And I thoroughly enjoyed talking to Carolina. She's a real expert and has a lot of passion and expertise for her subject, as you'll hear. The Learning Scientists actually have a new book out called Ace That Test, which I'll link in the show notes, and I would highly recommend checking out. So without further ado, let me hand over to 2021 me to introduce this classic conversation with Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel. Enjoy. Have you ever got to revision season, starting to prepare for exams, only to find your notes from earlier in the year might as well have been written by someone else for all you recognise them? Have you ever brushed up for a test, only to find that by the next week you can't remember half of what you just learned? Do you ever feel like knowledge simply goes in one ear and out the other? Well, fear not, because there is a better way. Today, I want to dive into the incredible power of spaced learning with the help of Dr. Carolina Cooper-Tetzel.
Hi, so I'm Carolina Cooper-Tetzel and I'm a psychologist. I'm at the University of Glasgow, a lecturer in psychology.
Carolina's research and expertise focuses on cognitive psychology, in particular, spaced learning. As you're about to hear, spacing out your learning, coming back to things on different days rather than cramming it all on one evening, is an extremely powerful way to build up a lasting memory of the things you need to know for your course. But in my experience working with students, whether I'm coaching my private clients to help them get better marks in their exams, or running an exam success workshop in a school or university, I've found time and time again that spaced learning is woefully underused in practice. So to help us put that right, I'm going to talk to Carolina today and see how we can put spaced learning into practice. You may remember, if you listened to the last episode, that we were talking about retrieval practice, another super, super important learning science strategy. So I started my conversation with Carolina asking her about the relative importance of retrieval practice and spaced learning. And as you're about to hear from her, you really need to be doing both if you want to be learning your stuff effectively.
So my area of expertise is actually spaced practice. So this is where I started off. And very often I get asked, okay, so of all the different strategies that are out there that students can use that we know are effective from a research background, from a cognitive science background, which ones are the most important one? Or is there one that is more important than another one, right?
Yeah.
You just mentioned space practice and retrieval practice. And for me personally, those two things and those two strategies, they work so nicely together, right? Because when you think about space practice, what you're actually deciding is, when are you going to study?
Yeah.
How are you going to schedule your studying? Or for a teacher, how is a teacher going to schedule when to reactivate information that they had previously taught? And for the student, when is a good time to revise that specific lecture or that specific class content? So spaced practice is really all about scheduling. You can say that's one side.
Yeah.
But the other side is, what do you do when you actually sit down to study? And this is where retrieval practice comes in. So retrieval practice tells us how we should be studying when we engage in a study session. So first we schedule our study sessions. And one way to do that and one information to use is to use our knowledge about space practice. And then once we sit down to study, what is the best way to engage with the material? Is it rereading, or, as retrieval practice suggests, is it to close the book, close your notes, and retrieve that information from memory as form of a practice test, for example?
Absolutely. And I think that's such a great way to put it. You know, there's two sides of the same coin, and they both support each other. I'd love to kind of spend some time going deep on spaced learning. You know, we've talked about retrieval practice many times for students, and, you know, the various ways to implement that and why it matters. And, you know, in my experience of sort of working in schools and working with students, retrieval practice is maybe a bit faster to adopt and to start using. I tend to see students struggling a bit more to develop good spaced learning habits. That seems the harder one of the two to put into practice. So I'd love to kind of get some of your thoughts on that. But maybe first, what evidence do we have that spaced learning is so important? Why do we know it works?
So we know from massive body of research that spaced practice works with different kinds of material, with different learners, so young learners, more mature learners. We know that it works for different types of skills that you want to acquire. It works for acquiring knowledge, remembering facts, but it also works for motor skills, for example, for learning on how to play the piano, or on learning, for example, what you would learn in PE. So how to throw a basketball and so on. So we have those different experimental studies that were conducted over the past years, and showing really that it accumulated this evidence that spaced practice is a strategy that works for many different domains and for many different learners. It is actually a strategy that dates back to 1885 to Hermann Ebbinghaus, who basically showed that we can get out more from our learning if we have time between seeing the information for the first time and revisiting that information. So the forgetting of that information, the more spacing you have in between, and if you're still able to retrieve that information when you revisit that information. So that's basically the key part here. Let's say you study something on a Monday, right? And then you wait a week and you try to retrieve that information as form of a study event. So if you're still able to do that, that is more effective and will slow down forgetting more than, for example, if you had restudied that information right after you have heard it for the first time.
Absolutely. I know you've also written about perhaps some of the reasons why spaced learning works. Perhaps you could just maybe explain a little bit about that in layman's terms as far as possible.
So that's actually an interesting question. And the thing is, we know that spaced practice works, right? So we have the evidence that performance is better after you have spaced out your practice compared to, for example, doing a massed practice study schedule. So we know that. But the puzzling thing about the spaced practice effect is that researchers are still not clear what the cognitive processes are that drive the effect. Yeah. So there are different theories that are out there that have been suggested, but it's not the case that we can basically put the finger exactly on that theory that can explain all the different aspects that we find in spaced practice. What my research has shown is that spaced practice, so having longer intervals between one study episode and the next, that seems to benefit encoding and maintenance processes. And the idea is that if you space out your practice, so you have a long interval between one study episode and the next, it seems to be the case that if you make sure that you retrieve that information, so you restudy that information when it is almost forgotten, so that you really have to pull it out of your memory to reactivate and reconstruct that information. If that is the case, it really benefits remembering that information in the long term. So there is like this effortful process of retrieval that happens during studying when you have more spacing between one session and the next. If the sessions are not spaced as far apart, so for example, in the most extreme case, if it's an immediate restudy session, so you study something and then immediately after you study it again, something that you would do if you cram, then that process to actually retrieve that information again from memory after you have just studied it is not as effortful and will not benefit your memory for the information as much. So that's what the research shows. But it is one of those things where we know it works, but we still don't know really 100% why it works.
Oh, fair enough. You were touching on a really interesting point there about how to use it in practice and some of the kind of best ways to use spaced learning, you know, actually for real. And this point about it works best when the information is close to being forgotten, but not quite forgotten. So, you know, people sometimes ask, how big should we make our spacing gaps? How often should we revisit? And it sounds like based on that, we should revisit information when it's been long enough that we've almost forgotten it, but not quite forgotten it. And perhaps that's different for different individuals, and perhaps that's different for the same individual for different subjects or things that they find easy versus things that they find hard.
So, yeah, so there are different things that come into play there. First of all, that what we just discussed, that, you know, to retrieve that information and to reactivate that information just quite before it's forgotten. Another thing is to keep in mind is the forgetting curve. Okay, so what we know from starting with the research that Hermann Ebbinghaus did in 1885, what we know is that most of the forgetting takes place in the first 24 hours. So in the very beginning, when you have been presented with something for the first time, if you don't reactivate it within that short period of time in the beginning, it basically that's when the most forgetting happens. So as a tip for students, what I like to suggest is, when they hear something, studying a new concept in class, for example, new ideas in class, what I would suggest is to do a restudy episode in the evening of that same day, because it uses that critical time period of reactivating that information in that time period where we tend to forget most of the information. And it also makes use of the benefits of sleep.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you study in the evening of that day, for example, you're going to study just before you go to sleep. And sleep is the magic that glues together our knowledge and where knowledge is consolidated and really helps remembering information in the long term. So if you are able to schedule a learning session in the evening before going to sleep. That's really beneficial. After that, I would probably suggest to go for an expanding learning schedule. So that means that you increase the gaps between one study session and the next as time goes by. So let's say the first gap would be a couple of hours, 10 hours or something like that. The next gap would be 2 days, the next one a week, the next one 3 weeks, a month, and so on.
Yeah.
So you would expand that schedule over time. I have done an experiment showing that expanding and equal scheduled lags between study episodes were both beneficial. However, there was a follow-up experiment by other researchers done a couple of years later. And what they have looked at is the initial learning that took place. So basically, how much prior knowledge the participants actually had and how well they knew the information after the initial learning episode. And what they found is if that level of knowledge in the beginning is low, then they benefit more from an expanding learning schedule. So because you could think that, you know, if memory is kind of fragile in the beginning and then you reactivate it at a shorter period of time, it had a better chance to actually be reactivated and remembered. And this helps in the long term. From taking those different bits of different research together, I would suggest students to adopt expanding learning schedule in their routine.
Makes sense. Are there ever times when, or are there any advantages at all in using a contracting learning schedule where you're decreasing the length of time as perhaps you get closer to a test or exam?
It's interesting because most of the studies show no benefit of a contracting learning schedule. In my experiment that I conducted, I actually found a benefit for contracting learning schedule when the test was not too far in the future. But again, this was really, I think, more due to the fact that in that specific experiment that I ran, so I had participants overlearn the information. So they had to learn to a specific criteria. And this overlearning, I would say, is not as realistic in authentic educational settings. So something to keep in mind. So therefore, I would not say that this really translates well into a more applied setting where you have probably more complex material that you're not overlearning.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's interesting because, you know, I wasn't aware of the research to this level of detail. In fact, I'm not sure it was even done by the time I was at university. But, you know, I knew about spaced learning. And I think, you know, what I kind of ended up doing almost by accident was a combination of both. So I was expanding to start with, but then as the exam got close, I'd kind of go the opposite way and I'd start contracting again. And, you know, we've always said that cramming kind of, it does work. You know, there is a benefit to sort of cramming information into your memory. You shouldn't really rely on it because it's highly risky and very stressful and doesn't have very good long-term benefits. But sort of for me, just anecdotally, my sort of intuition that combination of both the expanding schedule to start with and then the contracting schedule just into the exam itself, I found that gave quite good results. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so there is actually an experiment that exactly shows that, but it's always in combination with having some spaced practice beforehand. So what they show is basically that if you include a cramming session right before the exam, given that you have done spaced practice before, that gives an additional boost for the performance on the test. So it is true. It works. What you would do expanding for the most part. And in the end, you would do a more massed revision session just before the exam.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
It made me think at some point that, and this is also how those effective learning strategies are introduced at conferences, right? So if you go to a conference in cognitive psychology, then you have many researchers, me included, right, who would go and say, so let's talk about effective learning strategies. Okay, so let's talk about this. And students don't use them. And I was listening to this, and then I was thinking to myself, wait, what do you define as effective learning strategy, right?
Yeah.
So let's take a step back here. Because an effective learning strategy could be, in the eyes of a student, as a strategy that helps me perform well on that test.
Sure.
That could be an effective learning strategy. And if that's your definition, then you're actually better off cramming. when we want to think about, okay, how do we get students to adopt what we understand as effective learning strategies, namely learning strategies that allow you to retrieve and access that information in the long term, right? I think we have to change in how they think about effective learning strategies and how they think about what goal they actually want to achieve. When thinking about ways on how to convince students to use those strategies more, particularly spaced practice, because as you said, they're pretty good at in using retrieval practice, right? So if I ask my class, and I do this very often, I ask them, so how do you study? They say they study with flashcards, was taking quizzes, and so on. So we got that one down.
Yeah.
But what about spaced practice? And the thing with spaced practice is it is more work for them to actually implement spaced practice because it requires them at the beginning of a semester or a term to sit down and to schedule time across the semester when they're going to study and revisit the different topics and the different classes that they are taking.
Yeah.
And then let's say they do that. They're very enthusiastic in the beginning and they do that. But then the second thing is to stick with it, with everything coming in that semester, to stick with that specific schedule. And that is the thing. The thing is not that I don't think they are unwilling to do that. I think it's a thing about there's so much things coming up at the same time then that it makes it harder to stick with that schedule that they have imposed. And then they start pushing one to the next. And then, you know, in a blink of an eye, suddenly it's before the exam and you're back to cramming.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you're talking now to thousands of students all around the world. What would your advice for us be? How do we overcome these challenges?
What I'm going to say is that it has to be something that has to be negotiated and done in conjunction with the lecturer and the teacher. Mm-hmm. So I think it is something where if students are aware that this should be happening, they can ask the teacher or lecturer to help them to implement a more continuous study schedule. For example, by giving quizzes at specific point in time that revisits old information,
yeah.
Or by giving them prompts on, you know, this is the material we studied 2 weeks ago. Here is a paper that relates to the same material we did 2 weeks ago. Let's answer some questions about that material. So to try to do this as kind of a partnership, I think that would be the way to go, because just doing it self-led, completely independent, is something that is really, really difficult. So that's probably one advice to try to get basically a holistic approach to studying and scheduling study sessions. And the other thing that I have seen is that it really helps when students understand the rationale of why this is important and to shift that aim towards a long-term aim versus I just want to pass the exam aim.
Yeah.
And one thing that I like to do as well is to make students understand that if you have your precious time that you're spending, right, to study so hard, why do you study it just for a single day and not for something that you might be able to use in the future, right? So to give them an explanation of the different strategies. And one teaching approach that I have that's a more holistic teaching approach is service learning. And with service learning, what I do there, students learn about all the different strategies and they look at the papers, they look at blog posts, they look at different resources. I direct them, for example, to your podcast and they listen to some of the episodes. And then they come back and are tasked with the activity to put together a tutorial for other students based on what they have just learned. So make them be the experts in how to study. I do this with university students that then go to local schools, secondary schools, and teach other pupils on how to study. And what I have observed here is, again, it's just anecdotal at this point, is that what students tend to do is they reflect on how they have been studying in the past, and they adopt some of those strategies themselves, because when they go out and explain this to someone else, they want to make sure that that's what they're explaining, that they're actually doing it themselves. And that seems to be working really, really well.
I think that's really powerful. Some fantastic ideas there, you know, working in collaboration with the teacher, you know, making sure you're clear on the rationale. Why are we doing this? You know, making sure you know why it works, or rather know that it works, and, you know, with the sort of right long-term goals in mind. And then also, you know, if you're putting in all these hours, don't you almost owe it to yourself to use that time effectively?
Yeah.
I was talking to Chris Bailey a couple of weeks ago, who's written a lot about sort of productivity and focus, and writes books about it. And he had this way of talking about distractions. We were talking about distractions at the time. And he said, well, don't sort of beat yourself up. Oh, I must not be distracted. I must not be distracted. Sort of take a kinder approach. You know, you owe it to yourself not to be distracted, because if you are, then you'll just be wasting so much time, and you'd be spending all these hours you don't need to spend. So it's almost a sort of self-respect thing. And, you know, I know from some of the students I've talked to in the past, that's sometimes a bit of a light bulb moment when they think, oh, you know, actually, this isn't just about doing this because the teacher tells me to and it gets me better marks. This actually saves me time. It means I can get the best results possible in efficient, nice, compartmentalized study time. And it doesn't mean I have to stay up all night and work all hours into the, you know, into the night in the library. You know, I can get some of my life back and do well in exams.
Definitely. I'm a level 2 psychology lead. So I have to basically think about the curriculum each semester for the students and what activities to do and for the entire cohort of psychology. And what I do is, obviously, people know me well, I do quizzes. I focus on the quizzes. So I create the quizzes in a way that the second quiz is a cumulative. So it will always have questions from all the other lectures that happened before. So it's questions from the first lecture that they visited, but could be the one that they just visited that specific week. And then the final quiz, again, has all the different, covers the material of the entire semester, right? So I made this change at some point because they had the quizzes beforehand. But for example, quiz number 2 would only include material that was covered between quiz 1 and 2, but not before. So I introduced that kind of longer spaced practice into the quizzes. And I did this within one semester. And then in semester 2, we had, when it started, we had staff student forum meeting. So where we sit together with the students and representatives of their cohort, and they basically tell us what is going wrong and what is going really well. So students came in and they said, we love the quizzes. And we love that, you know, you take a quiz and then suddenly there's a question from older material. And you really have to make that effort to retrieve that information again, to come up with information. And also, again, their words, not my words. And also what we realized is when we get that question about material that was covered weeks ago, interspersed into other contexts that we have basically recently been taught, we can see connections between those things much better. So it's really, really helpful. Thank you. But I'm like, okay, what's coming now?
Yeah.
One thing that we think could be improved is, why don't you put questions in the quiz in semester 2 that pertain to material in semester 1? And I'm like, whoa, that's amazing. So they actually completely embrace that strategy, right? And we're thinking about how can we, if space practice works, because that's what you said, it works and so on, we can see the benefits. We can see the benefits when we're using those quizzes to actually learn. Can we make it a little bit more difficult, right? So a little bit more effortful, and find a way to engage with material that we were taught in semester 1 when we are in semester 2. And it was, I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. Right? I mean, I got goosebumps when...
That's amazing. That's fantastic. Carolina, some absolutely fantastic advice through this. It's been so exciting to talk to you about all this. It's such interesting perspectives and so much helpful stuff to take away. So thank you so much for being so generous with all this. I always wrap up as we're coming towards the close with my time machine question. So if you were able to step in a time machine and go back and bump into 16-year-old Carolina in the schoolyard in Germany, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. What's the sort of one or two pieces of advice you'd give her about studying and learning to help her on her journey?
Yeah, that's a good one. Looking back, I did a lot of retrieval practice, I have to say. So that was always a part of my study routine from the very beginning. Basically, my dad was the one who would take time before each exam that I had and sit with me and ask me questions. And I had to basically to produce answers from memory. So that's a strategy that I have been very familiar with when I was, when I grew up, starting actually in primary school and secondary school and then going up to university. That was always a given. Space practice, not so much. So I think going back, I would make a bigger effort to do more continuous studying. I had a lot of exams. So in Germany, in school, we had a lot of exams, like many, many exams. And they were basically all pretty much crammed into 1 week. So it really didn't invite much space practice. So I would probably say, yeah, a little bit more space practice, a little bit more effort to do things on a more continuous basis, spaced retrieval, basically, right? That kind of advice, I think I would have been less stressed.
Fantastic. Smart, smart. Well, look, Caroline, thank you so much once again. This has been excellent. I'm sure there are people interested in getting a little deeper in some of the things you've been talking about. Where can people follow what you're up to and any other resources you'd signpost people to, both students and teachers?
Yes. So, well, you can follow me on Twitter, Pimp My Memory. You can follow my work with my colleagues from the Learning Scientists, the Learning Scientist website. We have everything on there. You can follow my work of the Teaching Innovation and Learning Enhancement Tile Network. The Tile Network has this approach of bridging different educational sectors in order to come up with research-informed approaches to issues in education. And what we're doing right now, we are adding the student voice as well for the Tile Network and have students produce blog posts on different issues and aspects that they find important to address. So we're adding that. So if you're a student, you're interested in something like that and to write a blog post, the Tile Network is one platform for it. Yeah, so I've put together some free resources for my students on how to study more effectively. I'm happy to share them as a link. You can just browse. Those are small sway presentations that you can just scroll through, and it gives you a blurb about each of the effective learning strategies and how to implement those strategies into your learning routine. So I'm very happy to share that as well with the audience.
That sounds fantastic. And we'll put all the links to all of those in the show notes. So on Twitter at Pimp My Memory, the excellent Learning Scientist website and podcast of the same name, your Teaching Innovation and Learning Enhancement Tile, and the presentations you mentioned as well. We'll link those all up and highly recommend people check those out. Carolina, thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks again, Carolina, for that stellar conversation. I've put links in the show notes to all the various resources Carolina mentioned just now, her Twitter page, highly recommend a follow if you're on Twitter, the Learning Scientists website, the Teaching Innovation and Learning Enhancement Network, well worth checking out if you're a teacher or an education, and as well as those pages she's created for students on the science of learning. A really nice summary of some really helpful and important concepts. And remember, if you're looking for help applying any of this stuff to your own studies, please do get in touch. If you're a student, you can head to examstudyexpert.com/coaching to discover how to work with me one-on-one to study smarter and lift your grades this year. Or if you're at a school or a university as a teacher or lecturer, check out what I can offer for your staff and your students at examstudyexpert.com/workshops. And again, you'll find those links in the show notes. For now, thanks again for listening today. Really looking forward to seeing you next week when I'll be talking to Oliver Cavaglione about the art and science of dual coding, which is the power of combining words with visuals. It's really interesting stuff, and again, quite underutilized in practice, in my experience. So really looking forward to seeing you then for that conversation. But for now, study smart and remember to space it out. I'll see you next time.
Wasn't that wonderful? If you're feeling inspired, why not leave us a rating and a review in your podcast app? It would make our day. Thanks again for listening, and see you soon.